The Veterans Affairs Department didn't waste any time developing new policy in light of a recent Supreme Court decision about VA's procurement habits. The rule of two is now in place across all VA buying offices. In his weekly feature, The Reporter's Notebook, executive editor Jason Miller writes about VA's new policy. He joins me now to discuss what people are saying about it. And Jason, this means that they have to use veteran-owned companies if they are available, no matter when in the fiscal year, even if they've met their basic goals for small business.
Right. That's a great summation of what basically the Supreme Court ruled back in June. This is a case called Kingdomware. You may have heard it before. And basically, this is a small business, a veteran-owned small business, that was said to VA, there's a schedule contract for a certain type of product, and we believe you didn't give us the right to bid. It should have been set aside. And VA said no, because we met our goal, our annual goal for veteran-owned small businesses procurement. We don't have to do that. Well, this went through all the court systems. Supreme Court ruled and said, actually, the way Congress wrote the law, you do have to do it. And this is a big deal, Tom, because this is called the rule of two. If you can find two or more qualified companies, VA must set it aside.
And it's a big decision, because it potentially leaves out thousands of other companies, and certainly the top 100 federal contractors potentially could be boxed out of VA.
Well, I'm not sure boxed out. I think that they'll see a lot more, and that's what VA told me. They think a lot more business will go to veteran-owned companies, and the people who support veteran-owned companies, the associations and the veterans themselves say, well, good, they should. They should be giving us more. So I think that this is a very interesting case, and one of the things that really impressed me, Tom, was VA got this policy out very quickly. We've seen over the years, Congress passes a law, it goes through the final,
sometimes it's a decade.
Proposed rulemaking, then the interim rule, and then the final rule, and then there's comments. It could take a year, year and a half, or much, much more. VA got this turned around in about a month, about 6 weeks.
And so what is it telling its contracting officers to do exactly?
So it's an 11-page policy, which we do have linked up on federalnewsradio.com. Along with that policy is what they call a decision tree, kind of a flow chart of if you do this, then you go down this path. And both, again, on federalnewsradio.com, and both give contracting officers a process to ensure they're doing everything they can to follow this rule of two. It relies heavily on oversight by the Office of Small Disadvantaged Business Utilization, the OSDBU office, as well as documentation by the contracting officer that they've done their market research, they've gone out, that they've looked at all possible sources and decided yes or no, they are two or more veteran-owned small businesses that qualify. If they're not, then they have to tell us why, what their market research showed, and if there is, then they must set it aside. And Tom, let me be clear here. This also means set aside under GSA schedules or other kinds of multiple award government-wide acquisition type contracts. So this is not just within VA on any one procurement, but the schedules and all that. So I think this is a fascinating decision.
So for example, if they wanted to say use one of the contractors on Alliant, they would have to use the small business version of Alliant, or at least seek bids there first.
Correct. Make sure if there was two or more qualified, then they could set it aside under Alliant for those veteran-owned small businesses.
But does it require them to find these two in the market research, or can the two companies simply show up and bid when there's a solicitation?
Well, because VA has to set it aside, that process means that they have to do that market research on the front end, whether it's through a source of sought notice or through the VIP, the Veterans Information Portal database that they run, or through another type of database that the government runs. You have to go, okay, who's out there and who would be not only qualified but interested in bidding? Because there's some veteran-owned businesses or even small businesses that may say, yeah, we're qualified, but we have so much work, we can't handle more work. So those are the two pieces. Are they qualified, and are they willing to bid?
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. What's the industry reaction to this?
It's cautiously optimistic. With most things in the government, the proof is in the pudding. I talked to Scott Denniston, who's the executive director of the National Veterans Small Business Coalition, a former OSDBU director at VA. And he said, listen, we hope this will lead to expansion of contracting opportunities. We are taking a wait and see, giving VA's past history. There is some skepticism. He does also say that there's some questions about it, such as the market research piece, in terms of where should the contracting officers go? Should they use the Veterans Information Portal? Should they use the System for Award Management? Should they use Source of Sought? What is really the process? So I think he was hopeful that some clarifications will kind of rise as this gets used. I also talked to Steve Coprince. He's a lawyer. He deals with a lot of government clients in the veterans world. And he said a couple things that I thought were interesting. Number one, he thinks for the most part, this is a very good thing for veteran-owned businesses. And in fact, his clients are already hearing more from VA for their market research efforts than they had heard previously. So he thinks that's a very good thing. He also says the policy is has some interesting areas that need to be better defined. And one of those is around what they call mandatory source. You know, the ability one, the federal prison industries, and how do they fit into this rule of two? So he says he believes that actually will get, unfortunately, litigated in the future as well. But generally speaking, I think generally, you know, because VA took this on, got the policy out so quickly, there's a lot of excitement around it.
Yeah, interesting. It seems like VA as an agency, as a organization, is reacting to the fact that it's under scrutiny all the time. And every time somebody throws a challenge at it, maybe now they want to really show they can rise to that challenge and not be seen as defying the Supreme Court.
And as you know, Tom, when the Supreme Court rules on something, it's pretty final, right?
I mean, that's about it.
It'll take an act of Congress to really change the law, and that's not happening anytime soon. So I think VA knew that it really couldn't drag its feet. It wasn't like there was an appeals process. So I think that's part of the reason. And what Steve Koprinz told me was he believes, he has no inside knowledge, that maybe VA thought they didn't have a great case and they were going to lose. So maybe they were drafting a what-if scenario, and maybe this what-if scenario was this new policy, and that's why they were able to get it out so quickly.
And while we have you, Jason, you've been also covering Circular A-130, the update coming out of OMB on that one. And now there's a focus on identity management. What's going on there?
So there's a ton on A-130, Circular A-130, one of my favorite policy documents, Tom. If I had to rank them, that'd be in the top three, of course.
I read a chapter every night.
Every night before bed.
Yep.
So I decided on this week's notebook to really focus on identity management, and I think there's two reasons why. The first one is there's so much has changed over the last 16 years since the last A-130 update that identity management is playing such a big role within government that the two things had to come together. The second, Tom, is because of between the security clearances and insider threat and all the things that we're seeing from a cybersecurity perspective, identity management, you know, broadly speaking, is such a huge deal. And I think it's really going to be a big issue in 2017 and beyond. And what I've heard about A-130, generally speaking, was it did a really nice job of bringing together the last 16 years of policy under one kind of overarching document. The other thing I think is important is what it does around physical access control systems. Now, these are the gates and guns, if you will, but the gates that open up when you use your pass to get into your federal building. And one of the interesting things that they did was A-130 said systems running physical access control networks are information systems. That had never been defined before, and I think that's a huge deal.
Well, they're on a network.
They're on a network.
And they respond to inputs and actuate an output.
But I think without that, previously, the security people, the physical security people could tell the IT security people, you're not playing in my lane, get out of my lane. Well, with A-130 now, they're all supposed to be playing in the same lane.
And A-130 revision is final now, or?
It is final. It's out. People can read it. We have a link on federalnewsradio.com. There's plenty in there to look at. Last week, we kind of gave the overarching perspective. This week, we're really focused on identity management.
Federal News Radio's executive editor, thank you for that update.
Always a pleasure, Tom.
You can read Jason's reporter's notebook now and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federal drive and click share with friends.